And our guest, Jim Maroney, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His latest work is called The Extraterrestrial Answer Book, UFOs, Alien Abductions, and the Coming ET Presence. We'll talk about that presence in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jim, this ET presence, yeah. How are they going to make it known to us?
Well, George, you know, there's a couple of ways this is all going to unfold. And first and foremost, I should point out that when I left the ship from my experience back in 1987, there was this really incredible sense of friendship. It was completely opposite compared to the first time I was on the ship, right? So here I am leaving the ship, and there's this real sense of camaraderie, mm-hmm. a sense of friendship, and respect for each other. And I remember the being saying to me very clearly, she says, "I wish I could stand beside you to face the things that you'll have to face." And I said to her, "That's okay, I understand. I got to go." And how this whole phenomena is going to unfold, I mean, it's really, in a sense, it's unfolding in front of us right now. And it's okay to be frustrated about what's kind of happening and how come we're not getting better information on this subject and all those types of things. I think it's perfectly natural and, in fact, almost even predictable. But the way we see it happening is that specific individuals are being selected, number one. Number two, the phenomenon over the years, if you look at 15-year periods from 1945, basically now we're going up to 2020, but over these 15-year periods, you can see distinctly there's changes in how this phenomena mm-hmm. is reacting with us or interacting with us, right? So we know there's more and more sightings taking place. We know the sightings themselves are even changing. Even the vehicles that are being reported are changing. So we see this ramp up in more and more sightings. In addition to this, and I'll call this the unknown factor, we have China sitting off on the sidelines. And China is struggling right now for its identity and position in the world. It's not going to be the first in space. It's not going to be the first to the moon, and they're not going to land on the moon. So what does China have sitting there as the golden chalice of rewriting history books and space exploration? Now, if they've got evidence that extraterrestrial life is present, we could and might see something coming from China, because they don't have to deal with the same kind of things that the Western governments have to consider or the Western military, right? So there's more incentive for them.
Well, they're not concerned about religion, that's for sure.
That's right. Absolutely. So I would call this, from a geopolitical standpoint, that's something to keep our eye on. And so things could change pretty radically. So here we have not only the phenomenon that's changing, and nobody has control, no military has control over that, and we have more information being allowed to on the internet, and we have countries like China basically sitting in the wings, superpowers and nuclear superpowers, and with political reasons for possibly acknowledging and formally acknowledging the existence of extraterrestrial.
Well, if statistics are correct, millions of people worldwide are being abducted.
That's right.
Why?
Well, yeah, it seems that this intervention that's taking place requires them to take people and bring them on board these ships and perform procedures that obviously cannot be done, on a terrestrial land, in a particular area or in a location. They actually have to be taken away. So whatever is happening, the technology that's involved is so advanced, it's going to be really difficult, I think, for us to completely understand what is actually taking place. But it's not impossible, and we should keep our eye on it. But certainly that's a component to it. So if we look at the United States makes up 5% of the population of the world, somewhere in that neighborhood. There's over 6 billion people in the world. And
we've got about 6.4 billion and growing. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Changes.
Those are what you're only counting, right?
Changes every day now.
Yeah. So, here we're looking at the situation, and a lot of people in the world look to the United States to take a lead role, in many areas. And I think that there's a growing frustration in the United States about the government's lack of leadership in this particular area, because, there's so many great people in the United States that have committed so much of their time and their life and their research into this area. So I still think that the United States can still take a lead role in this. It's not, that the party's not over yet, but some things really have to start changing, and I'm looking at this year to next year. Some real radical changes have to be taking place. My biggest concern is that when I see governments kind of surprised, you know, with something, they end up running around and making policy decisions that absolutely make no sense, you know. And we only have to look, for example, at global warming as an issue. There's controversy around global warming. There's controversy around some of the scientific data that's there. And yet, we have some politicians, you know, demanding to make policy decisions without really fully understanding the you know, the science behind it.
Yeah, but why do they come here if they're not truly involved?
Ah, well, I guess you're asking.
I mean, are we a farm for them?
No. In fact, the way I've come to understand it over the years is that if I'm an extraterrestrial, right, traveling through the universe, first of all, you're going to know where star systems are.
You're going to know what's on what planet based on whatever telemetry you might have.
Absolutely. So you're going to be interested in this. You're sitting back. You come across Earth. Now, you're much more advanced than the species here on Earth.
And you came across Earth a long time ago.
So what's going to interest you about Earth? And I think that ultimately what you're going to be interested in is the relationships or the people that are going to be created there or grow there or, you know, evolve there. So really what you're not going to be interested in resources. You're certainly not going to be interested in technology.
Why do you say that? How do we know they don't want whatever we have here?
Yeah, I think when you look at how the resources are distributed in the universe, I mean, when you look at different planets, I know ours seems to be quite a gem, but I mean, there's lots of water out there. There's lots of minerals in other planets. There's lots of...
Well, the soup's everywhere.
Soup's absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think that when they come here and how they decide to interact with us really tells us that what they're interested primarily in is us. You know, and to me, what they want is a new relationship or a different kind of relationship with us. Now, this relationship isn't one that we're familiar with. You know, this is a relationship that humanity has never experienced before. It's completely brand new. So we have to kind of get rid of all our preconceived ideas about, you know, extraterrestrials, what they look like maybe, or what kind of, you know, take me to your leader kind of attitude. All of this it's not going to be part of the game plan. What they're doing is they want these types of relationships to unfold. They're unfolding gradually. But when we look at, you know, the years between, you know, 2010 and 2020, something dramatic is obviously going to happen, and it's certainly going to involve them. And how they're going to interact with us and how we are going to interact with them is really going to depend, to a large extent, on us. You know, it's how individually we decide that we're going to respond to them. It's individually how we decide that we're going to basically run our world or run it into the ground or try and save it.
Sooner than later?
I'm sure hoping it's going to be sooner than later. I really feel, George, that whatever's going to happen, it's you know, humanity's not going to get out of this mess without a bloody nose. That's kind of the way I look at it. You know, it's going to be tough for us.
How will they accomplish this? How will they let us know they're here?
Well, the easiest way for them to do it is to continue to do what they're doing, and that is to continue to show themselves at a distance for the majority of the population, and then select specific individuals that they want to have contact with. See, in their selection of individuals, there's obviously a lot of work that goes on prior to them announcing to the individual or letting the individual know that they exist. So it's like an evaluation process, basically. You know, they're trying to find individuals that they can work with. You know, it's a difficult relationship, George. You know, it's been one of the most difficult things I've had to deal with in my life. And it's been a really tough decision for me to go public with it and start talking about it and deal with the negative, you know, aspects to this phenomenon and the controversy that surrounds it. But, you know, in my history, in my work, I've seen so much good come out of just general education. Right now, I've accepted a position with the International Metaphysical University to offer a course in UFOlogy. And I've done that because in my work in health and safety, I've seen where we've made dramatic differences in how people work and keeping them safe and keeping them alive just through, you know, good educational programs and systems. So why can't we apply the same kind of reasoning to, you know, to the phenomenon itself? I think what we need to do is take responsibility for this position. And George, I think I really like what you said earlier, and that is, If we continue to look for governments, you know, to give us the answers, I think we're going to be sorely disappointed. So what we do, though, is we have the ability to try and educate ourselves individually about what's happening. I've never been one, George, to say, you have to believe absolutely everything I say. I think that, you know, as I've learned through this whole, you know, long 25 years, there's many things that I've changed my mind over. You know, I thought, well, I believe this, and then I would change my mind later on and say, well, maybe that's wrong. Maybe I'm going to, you know, adopt a different viewpoint. And that's just normal with normal, you know, education and growth and those types of things. So I've never been angry with anybody who didn't believe me. And I just said, you know, that's okay. I don't see it as my job to convince people about the reality of the phenomenon. I'm much better at dealing with situations and crisis situations and managing those crisis situations. It's been my history and my background in those areas. So really my role, I see my role evolving to, you know, to the point of what happens the day that we announce or that a government announces that the phenomenon is actually real. Because if people thought, for heaven's sakes, that, hey, you know what? There's a lot of conflict right now around the UFO subject. Well, just wait. Just wait until a country announces that the phenomenon is real.
Well, that's true. Tell me a little bit about the UFO website in Alberta.
Well, the Alberta UFO website, I actually put this together from a gentleman. A gentleman had actually put this together first prior to me actually owning the website. And I decided to take this on because when I had my experience in 1987, I really didn't know where to turn to, who to talk to, or even who to report it to, even if I wanted to. And I was really uneasy about going to the police about it. So, you know, for good reasons. And so I thought, you know what? What we really need to do is set up a system to at least track UFO reports and UFO sightings, because from a scientific standpoint, when we can collate this information. And what I've been able to do here in Canada is take this information and transfer this information to an organization, strangely enough, just outside of Manitoba. And there's a gentleman there that actually collates all reports in Canada, and we produce a national record, essentially, of UFO sightings and UFO reports in Canada.
Well, that's happening, isn't it?
It is. And in fact, we've seen a 25% increase in sightings reports from 2008.
Good reports?
Really good reports, actually. Some with pictures. And I love the reports that have multiple witnesses to the reports themselves and people who don't know each other and reporting the same type of phenomena itself, the same type of objects, those types of things. What's remarkable, George, is that even people who are willing to report on the website, the majority of them still request anonymity and confidentiality. And that shows to me, that tells me that there's still fear of ridicule.
Ridicule, sure, yeah. Absolutely. What about pilot cases in Canada? Do you get many of those?
We've had a few pilot cases. When we get the pilot cases, I personally transfer them to somebody else who actually has a pilot license, and he answers or asks much better questions than I can. With respect to how those are reported. One of the trouble or problems that we have here in Canada with respect to pilot sightings is that pilots are kind of nervous about reporting them, particularly to a UFO organization, you know. They're still worried about negative consequences.
Yeah, but your group's pretty credible.
That's true. Absolutely.
Maybe very credible.
It is. You know, I've certainly spent a lot of time trying to ensure that credibility and certainly the guaranteed anonymity from people if they want to come forward. I completely understand when people are nervous about going public with certain pieces of information that they've experienced because they're worried about their career or they're worried about ridicule.
Jim, some people believe that these ETs are demonic.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Not at all, George. You know, my experience has been from them that, you know, this relationship, George, is happening thousands of years before it should have. I know we probably often like to think of, oh, no, we're all ready for extraterrestrials. You know, we can handle it. You know, from my experience, this is a very difficult relationship. I have to say that they're very cautious about how they are interacting with us because they're worried about having too much contact with us and that being damaging. So thinking that, just understanding that this is happening thousands of years before it really should have, the reason why it's happening is because of our, you know, of what we're doing, of this imbalance, I could describe it, between our technological development and our spiritual development. That's primarily what the issue is.
Had they taken you off the planet, and let's say they would have returned you in 10 years, would you have gone?
Oh, No.
No
No.
way. Me either.
No, I was born here, raised here. You know, I've got responsibilities here. There's a real feeling that I'm supposed to be here, regardless of how tough life gets at times. And life is a beautiful thing to live, even though we have some real challenges ahead of us. All of us are here for a reason. And, you know, I don't think God would have put us here on this planet if we weren't capable of fixing our problems. And I really have a real overall sense that, you know, I have a responsibility to do that. And there's many people that feel the same way I do.
Is it your impression that they're from just one planetary system?
Well, genetically, there's very little differentiation between them. So they're not mammals per se. I didn't see, you know, I'd say they probably have maybe an insect kind of background.
Insects with brains, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're definitely alien in that sense. And yet there's a sense of commonality between them as well. I mean, they have a sense of humor. They understand us in ways that we don't really understand ourselves. So there's a real remarkable relationship, I think, that can be forged. I think one of the important things, George, is that what they want more than anything is a better relationship with each other. In other words, a better relationship between human beings. That's primarily, you know, this relationship with them, yes, they would like that, but primarily they know and that we need better relationships with each other.
Is there anything here that scares you about them?
Yeah, you know what, George? I love these guys. I consider them my friends, and
But there's a but coming up.
they still scare the hell out of me. You know, if
Do
you were to
you
tell,
not do you not trust them?
I do. It's just so difficult, you know, dealing with them. It's just so difficult. It's demanding. You know, it's been a difficult experience for the last
Is it
25 years.
exhausting?
It can be. You know, I don't think it's for everybody, George. You know, I really don't. I don't, you know, if someone to say, "Oh, I really want an experience with extraterrestrials," I'd say, "Be careful what you wish for."
Do you think, Jim, that they have taken anybody
And not returned them, you mean?
and not returned them, and you know, beyond the person's free will, they just took them?
Ah, good question, George. I don't know. I really don't.
I
It's
mean,
possible,
are they
but
capable of doing that?
oh, they're certainly capable of doing that. Certainly capable.
We have a lot of people that disappear off this planet, and they just don't know where they are.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's possible.
I mean,
I think that's a.
tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, I think that is a possibility that cannot be ruled out at this point in time, so early in our understanding on this. And that's the other thing, George. You know, we're really at the very cusp of understanding what's actually happening. So it's quite okay to have a whole pile of different ideas about what's actually going on, just keeping in mind that the majority of them are going to be wrong, you know, the majority of our ideas about this subject. And in fact, the majority of my ideas about this subject are going to change, and so we'll likely be wrong. But still, there is so much more that we can learn from this process, and there's still a lot to be gained from it.
The extraterrestrial answer book, where do you get it?
Right now, you can get it from Hampton Roads, actually. Hampton Roads Publishing has a book.
Amazon, do they have it?
And Amazon also has it as well.
All right, very good. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment with Jim Maroney. His website again is AUFOSG.com. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We make it easy for you. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. And we'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Absolutely. We're going to take your calls with Jim Maroney now, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, by the way, if you live in the greater San Diego area, listen to us on our huge affiliate there, Kogo. Saturday, I will be there from 10 to noon at the Science of Aliens. That's right. It's at the San Diego Air and Space Museum in Balboa Park. I'll be there for a couple hours. It's a little meet and greet. We'll have some fun. Nothing formal. I'm wearing jeans. Sorry, that's the way it's going to be. And you should come comfortably too, just to sit around and have some fun. But just call Kogo and listen to Kogo, because they've been giving out free tickets like crazy. So take advantage of it and come by and storm the place. Back in a moment with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. We're going to take your phone calls with Jim Maroney now, this half hour or so. Jim, these ETs,
yes,
the talls, the shorts, what do you think the difference is? What is one group robotic?
No, they're all biological, but it seems to me, when I look at some, when I was observing the differences in their structure, it appears to me that however genetically they evolve, they can adapt incredibly well to different environments, and that not only can they adapt, but they can adjust their, you know, physical appearance if they need to. And, you know, they decide, for example, I need so many soldier, you know, ants or whatever, boom, you know, they construct or they develop or evolve some ones with specific functions. So it seemed to me that their functions were broken up according to height and size as well.
Okay, let's go to Corpus Christi, Texas, first-time caller. Cole is up with us. Go ahead, Cole.
How you doing, man?
Good.
It's great to talk to y'all. I was wondering about this thing. I was reading some old Marcus Aurelius writings and Epictetus or whatever his name is and a couple others, and they would talk about, like, people with scales and stuff like that, like lizard people and stuff. And I was just curious, like, is it possible that some of these people are like people that were here at one time, left, and have come back and are kind of observing us and talking to us like that? Or is this a situation where it's like somebody that, you know, like these are people that have just decided to come here from a whole other area that we've never heard of?
They may have been here, left, and came back. Hey, Jim, you believe that this has been going on for a long, long time.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we may never know exactly how long they've been here unless they actually tell us. But I think it's really safe to assume that they've, you know, been here quite a bit longer than we've been aware of them.
While this was going on with you, why didn't you ask them, where are you guys from?
I was actually, at the time, I was just so busy trying to stay in control of myself and not freak out and try and get out alive. And that was my primary, you know, goal.
Well, you succeeded there.
Yeah.
You did that. Do you have family?
I do, actually.
What do they think of all this?
Well, when I got married, I said to my wife, and this is really practical, George. I mean, because these things really do happen, and this was really going on, I knew that I was exposing a person that I loved to something that I didn't fully understand, and I certainly did not have any control over. And that, to me, meant that I would be possibly putting her at risk. And I thought to myself, you know, I love this woman. What am I going to do? And I thought, you know, I need to tell her about this part of my life. And in fact, you know, I hid that from her. And I thought, you know what, she needs to know. And when I told her, she accepted it. And she said, that's fine, Jim. You know, I believe there's things out there that we don't fully understand. And I know you well enough, blah, blah, blah. And everything is good. And I think that really took a huge weight off my shoulder. And even today, you know, I asked her, you know, how do you feel about me going on the radio program? And she goes, you know how I feel about it, Jim. And I looked at her and I laughed and I smiled. And what she feels is that, and she said this in her words, and I says, Jim, you're a good man. You're a nice man. You know, you're not out to hurt anybody, and I just don't want to see you get hurt. And I said, honey, that's okay. I know, you know, but this has to be done. So we have a really close relationship. And when we were raising our kids, which are 25 and 26 right now, Early on, we decided that we weren't going to tell them about any of this. And in fact, Tina, you know, my wife was actually exposed to these extraterrestrials too on our wedding night. On our wedding night, if you can believe it. It occurred down in Ontario. And so they knew, like, they were aware of what was going on in my life. And they came into the room very briefly and gave her a small, you know, bit of an experience about what was going on. And I think what they realized, and we're still married, it's over 18 years. And so I think what they realized was that I needed somebody that was going to understand the phenomenon was real, that was going to still be by my side. And that's, you know, that's really helped our relationship.
We have ETs who are wedding crashers.
Yeah, that's one wedding gift. You don't have to worry about repacking.
Exactly. Let's go to Stanford, California. Barbie on the wild card line. Hey, Barbie, go ahead.
Hi. I have a question. Jim, what do you really think that their primary intention is?
Primarily, their intention is to save humanity or allow humanity to save itself so that we can have a relationship with them in the future. I think humanity, in their mind, in their eyes, has something to offer, not just the world, but offer the universe. There's something special about us, something unique about us that the universe actually needs. And they see it as their responsibility in a way, or hearing a calling, to come and help us. And they really see us as partners in the future. And that's why they're here.
All right, great. Thanks, Barbie. Appreciate that. Next up, we go to Knoxville, Tennessee. Charlotte on the wild card line. It's your turn. Hey, Charlotte, go ahead.
Hi there, George.
Hi.
I was glad to hear this story tonight because I just came back a week ago from the International UFO Congress in Northern Nevada, and Stan Romanek was one of the guests there, and the beings that are mentioned tonight seem to match up pretty much with the description of ones that Stan Romanek had encountered. These beings, he described it, were no more than 4.5 feet tall. They had large heads, kind of like the grays. Their eyes were almond-shaped, but they had the blue irises, like was described tonight. And someone, he had drawn pictures of them. Someone told him they were called the Clarion people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are y'all familiar with Stan's case?
Oh, I am very much so. We've had him on the program before. You know, he did not pass a polygraph test that we administered to him. In his defense, he claimed that he was on medication, and he knew going in he probably wasn't going to pass, but he didn't pass it. Jim, do you've heard of that case?
I wish I could say that I was really familiar with it, and I'm not.
This started off with a case where he thought somebody was a peeping Tom with his daughter in her room, so he set up a camera. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, he had pictures of something on the outside that looked like a little E.T. peering into the window, you know, with the head popping up and down a little bit. And then off it went.
You know, I might be accused of being, strangely enough, one of the great skeptics out there, because I am skeptical about a lot of things. I think you have to approach this area with a high degree of discernment, you know, and it's okay to be critical. And for me, given that story, I'd have to put it more on the questionable side.
Let's go to Morgantown, West Virginia, east of the Rockies. Gary, it's your turn.
Yeah, I'm listening to you on WAJR 1440 AM.
Super.
Long time listener.
Thank you, Gary.
It's a great pleasure to talk to both of you.
Okay.
Sir, I was wondering if they're concerned, and they probably are, given who our political leaders are around the world and how they act nowadays.
Yikes.
Are they concerned that our political leaders would not want to cooperate with them? And could they be here now? You said something earlier. They're here thousands of years earlier than they probably should be. Is that because of the advancement in our technology and the fact that we have now the power to destroy ourselves?
Yeah, I think you've actually asked two questions. And the first question I'll answer is that from a political standpoint, our political leaders, I'm sure they're quite aware of how we, you know, assign our political leaders. Some are, you know, through voting, and others are just assigned themselves through military means and those types of things. And even though they're aware of it, they really don't have a desire to contact specific leaders and of organizations like companies or, you know, countries. And that's, I think, an important component to this whole part of the relationship. And I'm sorry, what was the second part? Gosh.
Do you think they might be here? You said something earlier about thousands of years sooner than they should be or wanted to be. Do you think that might be because we now have the technology to destroy ourselves and send a ripple effect through the universe by doing so?
Absolutely. You know, they feel that the loss of humanity would be too much of a loss for the universe. They think that there's too much value, really, to allow us to destroy ourselves. And they've decided to intervene for that reason. So certainly our technology is a problem. More to the part of it, though, is our willingness to use that technology for destructive reasons. And that's the ultimate, you know, part of the problem. Because just getting rid of our technology isn't going to solve our ultimate problem.
Are we going to wake up in the morning like the movie Independence Day and have huge craft over major cities all over this planet?
Wouldn't that be something? I don't think that's going to be the case, but it... You know, I don't really know. One of the experiences that I had with these beings, and this is really incredible, when they want to tell you something, when they want to convey a message with you, George, they just link with you and they show you something. You know, so here I am in educational systems, and I have to convey my ideas by using language and just verbal language. With these beings, what they have the ability to do is just take you. So one minute you're standing there in front of them, and the next minute you're someplace completely different.
Right.
You're standing beside a friend, and you're observing something, but you're actually experiencing it. You're feeling it. You're sensing it. You're seeing it. And it just, you know, your emotions are just enormously, you become overwhelmed by the experience itself, and then the experience ends.
What are the chances, what are the odds that you're being tricked by them, that there's a deception?
I've never had a sense that I was being deceived in any way. And I, you know, gosh, if you're going to be dealing with human beings, you're going to be familiar with some forms of deception. Granted, these are more, you know, advanced beings than us, but I've really never had that sense that I was being, you know, utterly deceived by them.
Did you touch them at all? Like,
yes.
Their arms or anything? What do they feel like?
Leather, you know, kind of like a leathery kind of feel to them.
You know how when you stick your finger in your, like, you poke your arm, you can see it go in. There's a little indentation. Same thing with them?
Yeah, and they're very gentle. Like, there's a very kindness and a very a fragility about them. Like, their bodies are very fragile.
Is there a bone structure?
I would say there's a bone structure and...
Or just cartilage, maybe.
Oh, boy. That's a really good question.
You sound like a doctor.
Yeah. When I was walking, and I had this being in front of me when I was on board the ship, I remember studying the head and the general structure. And one of the things that really struck me was that the neck itself was extremely small. And if you consider, for example, human beings, I mean, our head actually weighs quite a bit. And that's the reason why we need the muscle and the bone structure in our neck.
Keep our heads up.
Yeah, to keep our heads up, to move them around. And you know, football players obviously have a much bigger neck than most of us. But when I looked at this thing, the neck was so small. I mean, it was almost pencil thin. It was unbelievable. I thought, well, obviously the structure has to be different than us dramatically. Either that or somehow gravity doesn't affect
you. Could probably put your one hand around their necks, right?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you could, yeah, you could put your hand, if you just wanted to grasp their neck, you could put your entire hand right around it.
Let's go to Andrew in Los Angeles. You're up with us. Hey, Andrew, go ahead. You're welcome to Coast to Coast.
James, I would first of all like to say that I think you're very sincere, and you come across as somebody who's telling the truth as you see it and believe it.
Oh, thank you very much. That's really kind of you.
But I have to be really, really brutally honest with
That's
you.
Right. Hold on, Jim. Here comes the butt.
Okay. The brutally honest perspective that I see is this. If these are really, really, truly benevolent beings, why would they, first of all, impregnate numbers, scores of women? Nobody knows for sure.
Right.
And if this is happening, why would they harvest babies from these mothers and not give them back? This does not make any sense. This tells me there is another agenda there.
Right.
And, you know, far brighter individuals and better educated people than myself have said this,
right,
that there's something more to the story. If they were really, really trying to help us, they would give us cures for many of our diseases. They would give us medical breakthroughs on how to extend life. But no, I think we've got something that they want, and it may very well be our property. It may be our lives, and maybe it's our freedom. And all I can say is, if we decide to give in to this new concept that you're proposing,
right,
it will turn our lives around forever, and it could be for the better, and then again, maybe not.
So what if they come back with hordes of these hybrids, Andrew and Jim, and, you know, they try to attack us?
Right.
Or take us over as far as our leadership roles and take control of our lives.
Yeah.
I mean, there are many possibilities.
David Jacobs believes that.
Right.
I believe it, too.
Yeah. Good questions, Andrew. Thanks. But you believe, Jim, that they are very honest here.
They are. Now, I think I should be clear, too. What we're dealing with is nothing short of, you know, the salvation of humanity. So then it comes down to, what are you prepared to do to save humanity? You know, what should we take off the table? And they don't follow the same social rules that we do in some sense, right? Because our social constructs.
I'm not sure we follow social rules.
Yeah, I guess we can't even agree on it ourselves, can we?
No.
So I, what I, you know, the idea of hybrids was something at first that really disturbed me, because I really like these guys, and my experiences with them had been generally positive, even though they've been difficult. And I really had to get my head around this. Like, what if this was really happening? Why would it be happening in this way? And one of the things that I really began to understand was that, first of all, just going from a different environment from where they came from to our environment is remarkably difficult. And we just assume that, you know, watching Star Trek films, that you're just going to go from, oh, one planet to the next, and you can jump in and out without any kind of consequence. Well, that's just not true. There's a whole vast variety of different bacteria and viruses that are going to, you know, impact you as a person if you're, you know, getting into a different planet. So these beings have to contend with a completely different environment. We don't know where they came from, but we can guess it's maybe similar to Earth, but maybe not. So how do they adjust to the environment like Earth with all the different types of bacteria and viruses that exist in the entire different environment? And one of the ways you could do that is you could, you know, have what I call maybe a hybrid. In other words, you could find a way, because you're dealing with human beings, to impregnate, you know, females, develop, you know, take essentially the embryo out within the first trimester, because most of the antibodies are provided to children during the first trimester of development. So, you know, it's a good way, essentially, just from a strictly scientific standpoint, if I pull myself away from my feelings, just say, look, from a scientific standpoint, it makes sense to do it this way. You know, that way you basically have a population of beings that can interact with human beings much more easily than it would be otherwise.
How many of them were in the craft?
I saw in total probably in the neighborhood of 20 or so, but again, there was many more than that. And one of the things I did see in the craft were other people. And other people that turned out, I remember you asked...
Were they afraid?
Actually, all the people that I saw in this room, the room was there's about 70 beds in the room. It was gymnasium. If you think of it just a normal high school gymnasium, that's what it kind of looked like.
No privacy, I take it.
Yep, no privacy, high ceilings. And there was multiple beds that were all laid out, and there was all, you know, people basically lying on the beds.
Hold that thought, Jim. More to come, and don't hang up. You'll lose your place in line. We'll be right back.